joined now by the actor, writer and director Tama Matheson, who is going to tell all about this new music play that you've created about the life of Byron. But welcome to interview.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Very nice to have you here. I mean, it is a rich vein, isn't it?
It is.
What a life.
It's one of the richest themes in English literature, I think, because he is one of the most spectacularly irreverent people in all of English history. I mean, scandalous, wonderful, lyrical, poetical, and we kind of can't quite comprehend the enormous effect that he had. He was the centre of the Romantic movement for a while. It seemed as though the entire Romantic movement was contracted in his person, and he was famous around the world. And for being incredibly witty. And so he had these wonderful adventures. You know, he went to Albania and talked with a warlord there, Ali Pasha, and saw beheaded felons in outside golden harems in Turkey and fought for Greek independence against the Turks, had an affair with his own half-sister. It's not a moral tale.
No.
But he was...
Not one of his shining moments, no.
Yeah, that's right. But he was... He could not be held or reined in by societal convention. And so he steps right outside and he's just incredibly funny on top of it all.
So wonderful material for a
play. Wonderful material. I mean, it's not until Oscar Wilde, until you get stuff that makes you laugh out loud like that straight off the page. His poem Don Juan, and he makes you pronounce it Don Juan as well, not Juan, because he rhymes it with new one and true one.
Right.
And so you have to do Juan. And... But it's essentially his life story. So this play is his life story refracted through the poem of Don Juan.
Now, it's not just you reading certain extracts.
No, no.
And then somebody playing some lovely music, which is appropriate, even though that would also be lovely. But it is something different, isn't it?
Yes, it's quite different. So this is essentially what I think is a fairly new form, a sort of fusion. It's an entire play and an entire concert mixed together. And so the music and the drama are absolutely inextricably intertwined. And at certain salient moments of the drama, the music sort of bursts out. And then because of the context, the music becomes dramatized. And so it has a new feeling to it, has a new excitement, and has a new meaning. So, and the great thing, of course, is you get a rest from me occasionally, my voice, because the music takes over. And so you're constantly being uplifted by the alternation of art form.
Now, you've chosen music by Hélène de Montgeroux in the main, and we're going to hear a piece, we're going to hear two pieces, in fact, but let's hear the first track of one of her studies, which Claire Hammond, who you'll be performing with, is playing on this. But to sort of get us into the mood, you're going to actually read an excerpt from the play now, and then we'll hear the music.
Yeah, this is just a little bit from the beginning. And this is a vindication for all those people who had to read romantic poetry when they're at school. This is Byron talking. I've been reading the poetry of Wordsworth. It is important, I think, to make a close study of his work in order to understand just how much of an idiot he is. For myself, I can hardly draw a syllable of sense out of it. Daffodils and Lucy's and destitute old woodsmen moping about thatched cottages. What a sentimental imagination operates in that withered old head. If it wasn't so irritated, I'd be sick. It's poetry, at least by his assertion. And then there's all that apostle of nature garbage. Listen to this guff. Nature never did betray the heart that loved her. You may need a moment to take in the full stupidity of this remark. Nature never did betray the heart that loved her? Did the estimable Mr. Wordsworth never hear of lightnings or earthquakes, of floods or typhoons, of consumptions or cancers? Is the weather so mild up there in Lancashire that he has no knowledge of freezing winters or parching summers? I can only wish him the wisdom of a bout of syphilis or an attack of gout. He is far too affected by that poisonous Frenchman, Rousseau, but Rousseau, at least, had the good grace to die and rid the world of his silly presence. Wordsworth has yet to do the world that service. The only punishment fitting for a bard of his dullness would be to make him poet laureate. One must ask oneself, after all of this, what are his words worth?